Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is the Jesus Christ Show. I am your holy host. Happy to be with you this Sunday, as I am with you every single Sunday right here, answering your questions and talking about the things that truly matter in life. And of course, the afterlife.
If you find yourself refusing to speak up when things around you are wrong, somebody's doing something wrong or somebody's doing something harmful or ugly, or if you refuse to take honest, truly honest, constructive criticism when it comes your way, you end up, whether you like it or not, being a participant in the destruction around you. The ugliness falls upon your lap because you don't want anything to do with it. You don't want to do anything to make yourself better. You don't want to do anything to make sure others are making themselves better, or a system that doesn't seem to be working gets mended. So ultimately the destruction is going to land on your lap as well. There are some people who like to surround themselves with yes men. And you know what a yes man is, right? A yes man is the type of person who only tells you what you want to hear. It's always positive. And I know it sounds strange to knock positivity, but this is false positivity. This is somebody who's looking for an excuse not to tell you the truth. And you don't want to be around that. Do you surround yourself with yes men, with yes people? Proverbs 27:6 says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy." And the visual that comes with that is that you might get wounded by a friend, by a friend's words, correction, honest, constructive criticism. But deceitful, but more harmful, are the kisses of an enemy, are the kind words, the yes man attitude from an enemy. How many times have you severed a relationship or not talked to somebody because they actually were trying to be constructive? And I know that's a difficult balance to find sometimes when you're dealing with people you care about. But how many times have you severed or cut or walked away from a relationship, people in your life, when they meant to really do well or to help you correct something in your life? It's what friends are for, right? So when you shelter yourself, when you remove yourself from the honest insights of others, you automatically create an atmosphere that harvests relationships with yes men only. That's it. So if you cut good people out of your life that are willing to tell you when you're doing something wrong or when you're doing something that's harmful to you, all you do is you open up yourself to the possibility of only having relationships with people that are just going to tell you what you want to hear. And that never, ever ends well. People who get into that cycle, people who do this relationship building with only yes people, never grow. And if this is where you're at right now, you will eventually get yesed to death. It'll take you down, you know, spiritual death, relationship death, maybe even physical death, if you just refuse to hear the honesty from people. So if you never have a true grasp on reality, because no one seems to care enough or everyone is too intimidated to tell you the truth, then you're going to be in a bad situation. You should invite that into your life. And it's not that everybody should be that way. You don't have to have everybody in your life trying to fix you. That's not the point. Nor do you want to go around trying to be that nosy body that's trying to fix everybody else. The balance is a place of health and kindness and love and generosity and comfort. Not finger pointing and ugliness. In the 1800s, Hans Christian Andersen wrote a short tale and had great insight about two dishonest weavers who claimed to be creating a new suit of invisible thread that was to be worn by the emperor himself. It was a big deal. This is for the emperor, right? Well, the two weavers informed the emperor that the suit is designed so that it would only look invisible to those who are not fit for their positions in life, lacking competence or just plain stupid. The two weavers even went so far as to pretend to personally dress the emperor. They mimed all the actions, making it look like they were real tailors, actually fitting him for these so-called invisible clothes. Now, you know the story. You've heard it many, many times. Everyone, even the emperor himself, pretended to see the suit, even though they could not. So they didn't want to appear to everyone else as incompetent or foolish. And so they didn't say anything. But ultimately it took the raw honesty of a child. And I know you've come across the raw honesty of a child. You laugh and everyone laughs in the room and chuckles, but it really is a thing of beauty. The raw honesty of this child to yell out, "The emperor has no clothes." And that child wasn't worried about anything but the truth, about what was obvious and what was seen by everyone, but nobody wanted to do it. Everyone was being yes people. Now, this lovely and cautionary tale of the invisible clothes and the concept of people not wanting to tell the truth, it predates Andersen's writings. The Spanish, Arab, Jewish versions of all kinds, different sorts. And it's not about plagiarism. It exists because the concept of going with the flow or lying to get ahead has been around since the beginning of time. In all cultures, in all ways. Jack Zipes, an American retired professor of German at the University of Minnesota, wrote about Hans Christian Andersen and the emperor's new clothes, saying it was a tale of the courage of one's conviction and that sight becomes insight, which in turn prompts action. Sight becomes insight, which in turn prompts action. Essentially, if you see something wrong, speak up and change it. In other words, don't be a yes man. Don't be a yes person. If you get caught in that spiral, it ends poorly every time. The truth is that people gain strength. You will gain strength by listening to the honest and loving criticisms of other people and others around you. And when you refuse to listen to those who really love you enough to be honest with you, you're going to fail. You're setting yourself up to fail. That's why gaining success is easier than keeping success. And hear that truth. Gaining success is easier than keeping success. Because when you're climbing, and think about this right now and where you are in your life, when you're climbing, you take all the tips you can get from anybody. You're not proud. You just want to grow. But when you're standing on the top of the mountain, no one can tell you anything unless they agree with you. You don't want to hear it. They're wrong. You're the one with success. but you won't keep it unless you follow your path to success, which was being open and ready and willing to listen to the criticisms of those around you. Scripture says, Proverbs 12:22, the Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in men who are truthful. Amen? It's so important that you are truthful with people in life, especially the ones you love.
It is the Jesus Christ Show. I am your Holy Host. Happy to be with you this Sunday morning, as I am with you every single day right here, answering your questions, talking about the things that truly matter in life and the afterlife. I encourage you to be bold and brave and go to the phone with your theology question, dealing with God, religion, spirituality, worldviews, the Bible. Or if you're going through something in life, we call them life situations, you can call about that as well. Anywhere in the U.S. of A, dial 800-520-1534. That's 800-520-1534.
If you're the type of person that just refuses to hear what other people have to say, honest and loving criticism, or you yourself hide from confronting anybody and pointing out things that might make their life easier or better, or make your neighborhood better, and rid of crime and ugliness or anything like that, if you just hide from confronting, then you'll be someone who is a magnet for yes people. And once you get yes people in your life starts to spiral out. You have no balance. You have no understanding, no balance of what right and wrong is. Your friends are just giving you kind words to make you feel good rather than things that will really make you grow. Not about ugly people in your life either. It's not about people being mean to you. It's about having a balance. I've never understood how a true friend would rather pretend they don't see the spinach in the other friend's teeth. And it just puts them out in the open, walking around with this thing, leading them to the embarrassing situation of hearing from a stranger, hey, you got something in your teeth. And I understand this example may be incredibly benign, but if you aren't honest about the little things in life, you won't be honest about the big things either. Luke 16:10 says, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with very much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will be dishonest with much. So this all works in both ways, right? You want people to be honest to you, you should be honest with others. And you should. You should be honest with those around you, and you should want to surround yourself with honest people as well. Exodus 18:21, but select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain. That's who you should surround yourself with. And it's sad when you see somebody, often someone famous, maybe someone in your family, spiraling out of control and auguring because everyone around them, every hand-picked person around them, is telling them how wonderful they are and how everything's great just because they don't want to rock the boat or they're getting some personal gain out of it. This happens a lot in relationships. The Bible is clear when it warns you not to help the wicked by lying for them, Exodus 23:1. Telling someone the lies they want to hear while they're hurting themselves is like taking a bribe to help the wicked. It's really, you're perverting justice, as it talks about in Deuteronomy 16:19 and 20, for your own gain. Yes, the truth can hurt, but the sting of the truth lasts only a moment. However, the lies of a so-called friend can destroy your life forever.
It is the Jesus Christ Show. I am your Holy Host. Happy to be with you this Sunday, as I'm with you every single Sunday right here, answering your questions and talking about the things that truly matter in life and, of course, the afterlife. I encourage you to be bold and brave and go to the phone with your theology questions or life situation questions anywhere in the U.S. of A. Dial 800-520-1534. That's 800-520-1534.
Jeff, welcome to the Jesus Christ Show.
Hi, dude.
Hi, Jeff. How can I help you?
Okay, well, what I my question is dealing with road rage, and I do experience it myself. I've always had it since my, especially when my daughter was born, and I was afraid that people that were driving recklessly and inconsiderately were endangering my daughter, and it just make me irate. And but now she's grown up and gone, and so I still deal with this. And you know, I know that I just can't get my mind wrapped around the fact that it's like somebody maybe punching me in the face, or you know, not caring about my safety, and they're just going to go do their thing. So it's not like I can just tell myself, oh, God forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. It's like somebody, if somebody walks you up and punches you in the face over and over, you're not going to keep saying, God forgive them. They don't know what they're doing.
First of all, Jeff, let's look at a few things. Are you a perfect driver yourself?
Well, no, and I always consider that when I'm thinking about the situation and trying to you know, come up with a solution. I say, that's me. I do the same thing. So that's me, but I still get mad.
But you realize these issues are deep and have nothing to do with your daughter, have nothing to do with the driver, and have everything to do with you, right?
Well, yeah, I realize that at some level I'm mad at myself. Therefore, it's easy to get mad at these people, even though I realize I may be doing the same thing that they're doing, maybe at one level.
Yeah, but there's something, this is much deeper. This goes way, way back to you being a kid. I mean, there's...
Are you saying that every road rager has a scenario? Is that your take?
Yeah, well, there it's not for the same reason specifically, but it's for similar reasons. There's two things that are going on when somebody has road rage. You're battling with a couple of things. One, you have horrible time management, meaning that you leave only minutes or seconds to your life.
That's not it.
Okay, that's one scenario. The second scenario is a self-centered scenario. Is you'll make excuses as to why, but really it's about you feeling like somebody is personally doing this to you. You even use the analogy of someone slapping your face. This person doesn't know you. Now, to be discourteous and to not go with the flow of traffic or understand that there's other people, that's why the wave is so popular. You know, when you see somebody wave in the car, the reason why that tones down anger is because the person in the car that starts to get angry is getting angry because they feel that they're invisible. They're not being seen. They're not being cared about. This person is being discourteous. And the minute the wave comes up, it allows you to know, hey, I didn't mean that against you. I made a mistake. I apologize. And everybody's fine. So it really comes from feelings of being discarded or not being important enough or not being visible. And those are the only two places that road rage stem from. You can say anything you want to about it, but that's where it comes from. And the Bible actually backs this up in one form or another. The reality is, obviously, road rage didn't exist in biblical times, but the concept of rage certainly did. And in James chapter 4, verses 1 through, well, we'll go 1 through 3 to give you a good sketch, says, what is the source of your quarrels or your conflicts among you? Is not the source of your pleasure that wage war in your members? You lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. And you are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, so you may spend it on your pleasures. And although this is dealing with the lack of humility, it ties very well into road rage, because really it's about that at the center of every quarrel or conflict is something that you're battling with on your own, not with someone else. This is something that you're battling with yourself. You want something, you want to be noticed, you want to be thought of a certain way, whatever it is. And when people don't do that, you want to force them to do it. And if they don't see you, you want to force them to see you. If they don't respect you, you want to force them to respect you. And that's not the way to do it. And you have to find out if your time management is on point, and you say that it is, then you have to find out why you feel like you're not being seen and why that bothers you so much.
Jesus, is it an internal answer then to come to grips with internally for individuals to come to grips with that, what you were just talking about?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then stemming from that is the road rage disappears?
Yeah, you start. It's a process, and you are not alone, Jack, at all. Or Jeff, I'm sorry, you're not alone at all. You're really wrapped up in something that a lot of people experience, especially depending on the region in which you live. If you're in Southern California, there's a lot of garbage. A lot of people drive horribly there. But that's one thing. When you start to personalize it, it becomes something else. When you start to take it personally, then it becomes something else because they don't know you. And you don't know them. You don't know what they're experiencing. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know what their day is. If someone in their life is that they love is very sick, you don't know if their child is in need and they are scrambling to get to work and to get home to take care of their child. You don't know what's going on in their head. So first of all, I think it's good for you to, whenever you get to that point of anger, start to build a backstory. I know it's going to be fake. Build a backstory about why that person might be doing it, why you might be doing it if you were in their shoes. But disconnect yourself from it being personal. And then the work that you do for yourself, Jeff, is to focus on why you get this way. And I'd say, not to put you on the couch or anything, but I would look at your relationship with your father and those types of things, because this usually stems from parental connection and the feeling of being not heard or not seen.
And that's where it may stem from the basic rage of whatever didn't work out when I was young.
Sure. Yeah, and you feel like you're still not being heard. There's a saying, and it's simply put, that confidence is quiet, insecurity is loud.
Oh, I like that.
And it really is. When you see confidence, there's something quiet and strong about it. And insecurity is always brash, loud, you know, banging, look at me, see this. That's just the way it works. So whenever you tend to get loud, people get loud because they think they're not being heard. You get loud when you drive because you think you're not being seen, that no one cares about you. They're driving in front of you. They're putting your child at risk when your child was small. They're putting you at risk. They're putting your family at risk when they put you at risk. You've worked hard to get where you are, to pay for your car, and now they're putting that at risk. All those things start building up, and then you explode.
And this has to do with that inner peace that you're talking about with the conflict with rage.
Yes, and I would say that it's a safe bet to say that it came from your youth, not being heard or something that you battled with when you were young, but only you can be.
I'll take a look at that, Jesus, because, you know, I tell myself over every time I get into the cycle, the vicious cycle of every time it happens and I get so upset, it just really takes me for a loop. And then I tell myself, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to do that anymore. And then sure enough, I get on the road and somebody will cut me off or, you know, do something that's inconsiderate or unsafe. And I go and it snaps.
The fact is, a bad guy that is filled with rage isn't going to take the time to pick up the phone, to call me, and to question it. Just wouldn't. The fact that you question it, the fact that you care so much to talk yourself through all that, means that you are a very caring and deep-thinking person. And people that are caring and deep-thinking tend to get worked up when people aren't caring and don't think through things.
Solve the problem? Can thinking through this problem, can it solve it? Or does it have more to do with prayer and thinking and even more?
Well, all of it plays a part. But I think for someone like yourself, talk therapy or talking through these things can be very helpful. There's practical application. You have to, don't put the weight of the world on you. But, you know, next time you get on the road, say, today, no road rage. When somebody does something, I'm going to explain to myself. I'm going to build a backstory and say their kid's sick with cancer, heaven forbid, and they're rushing to get home to them. Whatever it is to calm you down and to keep you in a centered place so that you don't do anything stupid,
is the best thing. I think that if you can find a good counselor that comes from a healthy perspective, it's not a bad idea to be able to talk these things through. And maybe you can, in the time allowed, you can focus in on pinpointing as to where it stems from and why you respond that way. But I think it's great that you've pinpointed anything at all and that you say, hey, I don't want this in my life, because it can be very dangerous. And it's one of those things that goes from, you know, no pun intended, but 0 to 60 in a heartbeat. And then you're looking at some stupid decision.
I've heard about it happening a lot, Jesus.
Oh, my gosh. People have pulled out guns. People have, done all kinds of stupid things. My producer, Neil Beck, when he was younger and dumber, would, you know, pull over or follow people and get really irate and all those things. And it just doesn't pay off. It ends up putting you in a bad situation, ends up putting someone else. I've seen people pulled out of cars and thrown onto the street and their head just missing within inches a passing car's tire.
How's the producer doing with it now?
It's pretty much zero.
Uh-huh.
It's just not worth it.
And he worked it out like what you're talking about, too?
Exactly. Just you start looking at the reasons that you feel so self-centered and so locked on why the world has to worry about you. And the best thing you can do, believe it or not, is to be the best driver you can be. And understand that other people are not always going to be that person. But what most people do is they make excuses for why they drive bad, and then they get upset when other people do it. So be the best driver you can. Be courteous, do the wave, smile, try and be aware of other people. That's the best thing you can do. And it starts with one individual, and then someone else does it and it passes along. And that's the best way to do it, Jeff. But you are absolutely on that road, my friend. Again, with the puns.
It is the Jesus Christ Show. I am your holy host. Happy to be with you this Sunday, as I am with you every Sunday, answering your questions and talking about the things that matter in life and, of course, the afterlife. Be bold and brave. Go to your phone with your theology question, dealing with God, religion, spirituality, worldviews, the Bible, or life situations. Obviously, during a time of crisis that's going on, give me a call, 800-520-1534. That's 800-520-1534.
Walt, welcome to the Jesus Christ Show.
Thank you for taking my call,
Jesus. My pleasure. How can I help you?
I don't go to church, but I do watch a particular show regularly. And often the pastor, I hear him say, absent from the body, present with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. From Corinthians, uh-huh.
Yeah, and I've never been able to get an answer from a minister or a pastor that was, acceptable or that I understood.
Okay.
When it came to the resurrection, how do they reconcile? I mean, I've read these books.
How do they reconcile what?
Well, if you're absent from your body and you're present with the Lord, and I've read these books where people have died and they've seen their relatives and loved ones in heaven. They recognize them. Well, how does the resurrection, God raises you from the dead, okay? And supposedly you go to heaven or you don't. If you go to heaven, you're already there. I mean, if
yes.
You're absent from your body, you're already with the Lord.
Exactly. Great question too, Walt, because, yeah, it is a little confounding when you think about it that way. Not getting into the books that you've read about people who said they've been to heaven and all that comes into a separate thing. But let's focus on the biblical context here. Depending on the belief, and there are some people that believe that the body is two, some people that believe that it's three, that the soul and the spirit are separate. I won't get into that because that complicates things. Let's look at the more mainstream belief that the body is two. You are flesh, your vessel, and then you are spirit. Okay? Because you at least believe that much, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the language is quite specific. To be absent from the body is to be present from the Lord. So the belief is, mechanically what's going on, is the spirit instantaneously is in the presence of God. The body stays where the body stays. And not until the resurrection are they married. And it doesn't mean that you are not recognizable in your spirit form. You absolutely would be. But your body is still in the grave and buried and all of those things and will only be united at the point of resurrection. But to be absent from the body, you're leaving the body, is to be present with God in heaven.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.